Welcome to PMA Takes on Tech, the podcast that explores the problems, solutions, people, and ideas that are shaping the future of the produce industry. I'm your host, Bonnie Estes, the Vice President of Technology at the Produce Marketing Association, and I've spent years in the ag tech sector, so I can attest it's hard to navigate this ever-changing world. Thanks for joining us and allowing us to serve as your guide to the new world of produce and technology. Welcome to episode 6 of PMA Takes on Tech. This is the final episode of season 1. Today, we will drop into a PMA virtual town hall recorded on August 5th. PMA has hosted virtual town halls since mid-March as a way to communicate with our members about the pandemic, its effects on the produce industry, and additional topics. Today's guests discuss how the pandemic has affected their companies and the use of their products. Let's jump right in. So innovators respond with solutions when changes and challenges demand them. Today, we'll hear how all along the fresh produce supply chain, COVID-driven technology is producing safer, more efficient tools for our industry. We have three really different, diverse businesses involved in the produce supply chain that have been affected and have responded to COVID in different ways. We'll talk to these three great panelists. The first one is Boaz Bakar, CEO and co-founder of FieldIn. FieldIn provides remote visibility into field activities to monitor mechanized cultural practices and give actionable real-time data to improve efficiencies. Second, we'll have Carolyn Mooney, CEO and founder of NixMove, a startup that provides developers with the building blocks to create and test models quickly, providing logistic and operation solutions. And third, we have Lou Perez, VP of Technology and co-founder of Appeal Sciences. Appeal creates longer-lasting produce that reduces waste and builds resiliency in the food system. We are excited to hear from our guests about what is happening to their companies during these times. So we'll start with Boaz. And he's at the very beginning of the supply chain, working with producers. So welcome, and please talk about your product and what has changed with your customers since COVID.
FieldIn basically digitizes the entire farm operation level. We develop platforms that combine an IoT device that we put on any farm machinery that make them smart and start to send data to the cloud in real time. And we add to this layer of IoT data a set of dashboards that helps to the growers and his team to take decisions from anywhere, anytime, and to see and track after the execution of the operation in real time. As I mentioned, our mission is to digitize the entire farm operation and to create new data. So basically, in order to digitize the entire farm, we develop three main models. One of them to cover the entire spraying and scouting operation. The second one is to cover the entire cultural practices that are happening in the farm. And the last one, the deal with smart harvesting. And basically, FieldIn allows to the growers to manage from farm.
One of the things that we had talked about, too, is that people are using the app the way you meant it to be used, or using the information and the data the way it was meant to be used before. They would go out and look and see, like, what's going on in my field? What's going on in my field? And now they really realize that by using the data that you're giving them, they don't have to go check the field all the time. And so it actually, COVID is kind of, because people are stuck more inside, they're using it the way that they should be using it.
When we started the company, I remember that some of our clients said that in the first time after 20 years, they can take a vacation finally because they control their operation from far. Over here, we see the adoption rate is just increasing because of that. So it's not for vacation, it's your day to day.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're really, this data I think one of the things that's going to happen coming out of COVID is just people are having to rely more on data and really understand what the data is telling them and rely on it instead of thinking, oh, I need to see this with my eyes. But what we see with our eyes isn't the whole picture that you get from all the data. So I think this has been an interesting time where people are actually relying on data. And I think we'll hear this from Carolyn as well, you know, that people are relying on data and using data to plan and forecast their businesses better.
What we develop is three main models. One of them is scouting and spraying to be able to manage the entire pest management cycle all in one place. So we are talking about large scale operation, tens of thousands of acres all over California that spread can start in Bakersfield and can end in Chico. Cover all other mechanized tasks that are happening in the farm. So we're talking about mowing, we're talking about edging. And of course, the last module is the smart harvesting. This is our latest addition to the platform. Basically, install IoT devices and all equipment related to harvest and being able to monitor and send alerts and get a benchmark reports to the grower in real time. How can he improve his operation from day to day? Where is this weakness? And how we can become better for the day after of the operation, especially in this hectic time of harvest, which is like a whole season short into 4 to 6 weeks. This is extremely important.
Let's move on to Lou. So Lou, your product keeps produce fresh through the supply chain. How has your product helped during COVID and what are some of the stories that you're hearing from your customers?
Yeah, thanks, Fani. Yeah, so Pila, I mean, the whole idea is since the beginning is that we want to tackle the food waste crisis, but use in nature as an inspiration for the different tools and solutions that we build. So with that appeal, just quickly, is a plant-based derived solution that, you know, can double or sometimes even triple the shelf life of many types of fresh produce. So the idea is that we're hopefully increase resilience and of the produce and reduce the need for as much refrigeration, plastic packaging, and, you know, controlled atmosphere, different things like that. So like I said, it's derived from nature, so our materials are found in every bite of fruits. It's a very thin edible layer on the outside of produce, and what that does is create an optimal microclimate inside the produce itself. So, and reducing the rate of water loss and oxidation. As far as you know, recently, you know, again, this is obviously a very difficult time for the food system, and our role has always been the idea is to help food businesses increase their resilience and operational flexibility. So, you know, the idea is that we give people more time with fresh produce. And when we say people, that includes, you know, suppliers, retailers, and then the end consumer. So if anything, what we've experienced so far during COVID is just more, I think, amplification or more demand from retailers, suppliers, and on a lot of also from end consumers. So the major thing for us is, like, again, is that we want to give more flexibility. The idea is that now if you can make different decisions with your crops or with your inventory, because now if you have an extra several days or weeks to then decide, should this go here or should this go there? Especially in times now where I think we're all really experiencing it, as you go to the retail store, you know, you're making less trips. You're trying to get everything done in usually a single visit. As far as like customer testimonials or customer, again, I think the demand has just been increasing more and more at the different suppliers that with the different suppliers that we do work with. I think a recent one yesterday, I believe it was in Fresh Fruit Portal, where Nature's Pride is expanding their facility. And I think naturally Nature's Pride is a great partner, and they're doing really well. But they also quoted, as far as the demand for PO has also accelerated their need to expand. So that was really great to see. And that was pretty recent. So more suppliers, retailers are recognizing the importance of, you know, adopting more innovations to the food system. I would say things have just been growing or have been more amplified.
Yeah, I think it's amazing right now because there's so much conversation about the supply chain and what's happening in the supply chain and how it's different than before. And I was talking to someone that buys from growers and sells to chefs. And she was saying, it's just, especially now when restaurants are opening and then they're closing and then they're opening again. And so you end up with product that you have to keep much longer than you expected. And so I think there's places like that where if if that avocado normally only lasts a week, but you'd like it to last much longer, then, food being able to last longer in the supply chain is just really a benefit. So it's great to see you guys doing that.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah. Carolyn, so your product works in optimizing operations and logistics. How has the use of your product changed during COVID? And maybe explain a little bit about your company as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So my background is actually in systems engineering. So all the things that both Boaz and Lou are talking about in terms of data becoming a bigger part of this supply chain ecosystem, especially with food supply chain specifically, I think is kind of bringing to light some technologies that have existed in other sectors for a long time. So when you look at the transportation industry and also things like even in the military industry, optimization has been a big part of that for a long time. But that technology really needed some kind of updates and more flexibility to be able to use across industry. And so here at NextMove, we're really trying to make that technology accessible. So you can think about, the issues in supply chain when you're trying to move people around, every, airline ever known is using some optimization to try to decide, how to set up those planes and those schedules and everything else. That can easily be translated into how you pack, different trucks for the supply chain for food, or how you decide on how to truck them to different places, or what goes where. And so that's really what we do here at NextMove is we're working on, optimization and simulation. So basically, how do you build automated decisions? And then how do you test them really efficiently so that you can be prepared for kind of a variety of scenarios? And I think COVID has kind of brought to light the fact that these systems are a little bit fragile right now. And so, as I would say, COVID basically made it so that forecasts fundamentally broke, right? Your forecast from May this year did not look anything like May last year. And that means that that using those forecasts made it very difficult, in your standard decision making. Your decisions had to change and you needed to be able to adjust on the fly. And so for us, we're basically creating a method for people to represent decisions as code. And so to really make it so that you can minimize cost or maximize value for your consumers kind of directly in how you make your decisions. So whether that be packing, material in a certain way, or Lou mentioned, wanting to make one trip, to kind of where your distribution centers are, stores, et cetera, that's all stuff that we kind of handle in our optimization technology.
Great. Yeah. And I think as you're talking about forecasting, you can't use last year, to forecast this year, but you're not going to be able to use this year to forecast next year. So
exactly.
I think people really depending on, thinking about how do I use this data? I think it's really important to use these new tools.
Yeah, exactly. And kind of, I was working for Grubhub for a long time, and that really is a real-time delivery problem. And so the state of the world is constantly changing. And so you want to try to create your decision models or automate your decisions in a way that's robust to change, right? And behaves as you would expect. And so so that's kind of the methodology behind NextMove is creating these resilient decision models for things like planning or packing or shipping kind of across the supply chain for food.
So this has been an interesting time for companies in all sorts of different ways. And the three of you are all startups at different stages. There's this whole question where's the money and are companies going to be able to continue? And so that's been another thing that's been particularly challenging for startups. And Lou, you guys closed a huge round during a pandemic, which is pretty amazing. And you had some pretty unusual, amazing investors that stepped into that round as well. So can you talk to us a little bit about about, I mean, obviously the whole thing started before the pandemic, but just being able to pull that off is congratulations.
Yeah, no, thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah, we're really, obviously we, you know, yeah, you're right. Things usually start before this point when you're considering fundraising, but yeah, super appreciative and yeah, super, yeah, just excited about it. So, I mean, when we talk to investors, I mean, we talk about reducing food waste, but really what we discuss with them, the bigger picture is an investment in building a more sustainable food system. So, and I think especially now, I think that's been, you know, amplified a lot, just as far as the importance of that. So, really the, you know, it's, we've been having a lot of demand and I think this has just only increased it. So, yeah, it's been great. So we were able to also, you know, we were able to raise, you know, a big amount came from GIC and, we had some other investor, local investors, some celebrities, Oprah Winfrey and Katy Perry. So, who had a small participation in the round and, you know, they're both extremely passionate about reducing food waste and making food more sustainable. So that was, you know, that's always been really fun to be a part of. The great thing I think, yeah, about having the capital now, it just gives us it puts us in a position to really grow and expand. We have operations in the U.S. We're in four continents basically now: the U.S., Europe, Africa, and South America. So, yeah, the idea is that, you know, continue to you know, build out a global coalition of producers and suppliers and bring longer lasting produce to, you know, to ultimately the end consumer. So. You know, working with Kroger in the United States, so the biggest retailer in the United States, Etika in Germany, and Salin Group in Denmark, and some really major suppliers like Nature's Pride, Horton Fruit, you know, Sakar. So the idea is like, we're basically just going to, with this capital, the idea is just to keep growing and expanding. So.
Yeah. And you guys, I mean, I keep seeing constantly that you're hiring, which is great to see as well. So it's good to see, you know, at this time when many people are losing their jobs, it's great to see you guys hiring and some really interesting positions that you're hiring for. So did you get to meet Oprah yourself?
No, not yet. No, I haven't got to meet Oprah yet, but James, our CEO, has.
Yeah. I assume she's not on your board either, right?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Yeah. So I know we're super fortunate and appreciative. Yeah. Just overall, I think, it's a, you know, investors are investors. And so, you know, they obviously do a lot of research into this and, you know, the fact that, startups and companies that are focused on food system solutions are starting to get more attention, I think is a testament to all the work that's already been done in this field. When I first started doing this, when you look at it, the idea of going, I can go to any retail store any time of the year and get any type of produce or whatever is, I think sometimes we lose sight of how amazing that is in the first place, the access we have. And, you know, I just really look at a lot of the new things that are coming out, like is being discussed today as, you know, the next, you know, obviously the, how do we not only have that, but how do we build it more sustainably and, you know, give, retailers and people more, you know, more opportunity, more, more solutions to make decisions. So.
Great. So Carolyn, what is funding look like for you? I mean, you're in an earlier stage and we don't want to compare you to, you know, Oprah knocking at your door, but.
Yeah, I wish Oprah can come anytime. I'm cool with that. But yeah, no, we raised a seed round actually in April. So we were part of the recent Y Combinator batch over the winter and we raised our seed in April and actually closed that right around the time the pandemic was really, I feel like, taking hold here in the States. So similar to Lou, probably like getting a lot of questions about what does your business look like, you know, in the face of COVID, I'm sure we had to answer some of those questions as well. Fortunately, kind of for all three of us here on the call, we're in, I would say, necessary industries, right? And so they aren't going anywhere. You know, supply chain problems are always going to be supply chain problems and necessary to solve. And, you know, things in the food system obviously are necessities for us all to live. So, you know, I think that kind of begets a little bit more attention in this time for investors, you know, that are looking really hard at what they're investing in. And so that played well for us, I think.
And you're working across different industries too. What other industries do you think you'll end up being involved in? Or do you think food is one of the ones that you'll spend a lot of time in, or are there other kind of equally important industries right now?
Yeah, food is actually the one I would say we're spending the most time in today. We're a little bit more on the prepared food side as of right now, or at least our initial clients are kind of in that sector. But I have a lot of interest actually going further up the food supply chain. I used to work for the EPA a long time ago. I have a lot of interest in just sustainability in general, and figuring out, you know, how do you make food like both accessible to people in a variety of ways, but then also from an environmental aspect, how do you make it more sustainable long-term? I know that's actually something you touched on in one of your prior podcasts, was just like the food system in general, and like, you know, how do you drive those changes, maybe to be more local, stuff like that. So I think there's a lot that goes into that. And for us, you know, I look at optimization as an opportunity to break that system down into kind of its component parts, and make sure that you're making solid decisions at each of those stages. And so that's kind of how I see us kind of playing in this larger ecosystem. But longer term, our optimization technology is very general. It's basically math technology, right? So it can apply to across many industries, and we're looking at both, you know, applicability across across the logistics space, across the food space, and even into things like finance and e-commerce. So very, very generic.
Great. So Boaz, what is funding looking like for you guys?
So thank God we was able to close a significant round just before the pandemic started. And it was coupled with like Q1, which was our best quarter ever. But having said that, once we saw the COVID is coming to California, to the US, I got a phone call from my board members that they told me you should get ready. We don't know what will happen. We don't know. There is a lot of uncertainty. I'm talking about beginning of the end of March. There is a lot of uncertainty out there, and we don't know what will happen. Get ready. So we basically redone our budget. So it will last. Our current budget will last for at least for 24 months, because we again, I'm talking about end of March. We didn't know what will happen. Now, a few months after, when we have budget until 2022, and we're starting to see that the investment companies or the VCs are opening their gates again, and they are looking actively for a lot of. They are looking actively to make deals. I think that the main challenge, so there is out there people that looking to inject money into the markets. I think the challenge will be going forward will be to gain traction from startups, for startups, and to gain basically to gain traction, just because there are no conferences, you can't meet your business. And if you are a young startup in earlier stages, to create a momentum before your next round, it might be challenging in the next year, because there is just not a lot of places you can interact with other people. So to summarize, from one end, we saw that the money didn't disappear. VCs are still looking to invest in good companies. From the other end, I'm telling you, it's harder to create momentum now those days, because there is just not just because you can't meet people. So it's going to be challenging, I think, in 2021, when we will see startups are starting to look for funding.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for just getting out in the field and trying to do trials and that sort of thing. So, you know, companies that are at that stage, it is quite challenging.
Yeah, I think what we've seen too, and you know, this is my first time founding a company, so I don't know how this has been in the past, but we've relied, I think, really heavily on warm introductions at this stage. And I think that's particularly relevant in the virtual environment that we're in right now. You know, getting those introductions to companies and getting in front of the right people is very relevant.
Yeah. So Carolyn, having been at Grubhub and now the founder of Next Move, how do you see the food delivery and logistics are going to change kind of through COVID and on the other side? And that last mile of any food is such a huge problem. And so how do you see that's going to go?
Yeah, I think one thing that we see and one thing that we were starting to see even at Grubhub is people are trying to change the game on how you get food. And I think that was already starting to happen and then has been accelerated due to COVID. And I think some of the considerations there are reducing the number of contacts that you have with different people having with the food that eventually goes to the consumer. And I think the other thing is just different business models. You see people kind of working out of, you know, the concept of like dark kitchens. You see, we saw a lot here in Philadelphia of people actually having direct to consumer from farms and from, you know, meat suppliers and just all sorts of things across the food chain as COVID really kicked up. And that is staying the same. Even, you know, restaurants are now selling food as grocers sometimes, right? The food, extra food that they have that they're not using. And so I think with all of those changes, what we're seeing is that business rules are fundamentally changing and they're changing rapidly. And we had one company that added like alcohol sales to their business because the rules changed in PA and they were allowed to do so. And, you know, making that change, they were using our software and they were able to make that change really relatively quickly from an operational perspective on handling. And they only had certain people that were qualified to handle it, et cetera. And so I think what you're seeing is that people need to be able to have a very tight coupling between operations and the technology that's driving it and have that quick feedback loop. And I think that's going to be something that's consistent going forward as people kind of challenge the operational environment in new and different ways.
That's interesting. So Lou, with you've got COVID going on and you've got this infusion of cash. So both of those things, I mean, how are your collaborations and your partnerships, how important are they now and how are they changing, you know, both with the cash that you have and being in the middle of a pandemic?
Yeah, I think it's the current ones we have. I mean, the demand is growing. So I think what Taboas was saying, you can't just send a bunch of people everywhere now. You really have to get creative within how you make changes or grow things. So I would say, if anything, you know, things have been amplified as far as the operations go with our current partners and the new ones we're trying to bring on as well. That's where maybe there's a little bit more where the COVID has a little bit more of effect, because then you're working with other suppliers and vendors who have their own supply chain issues. And beyond that, we had a lot of plans going into the year and we've been doing a pretty good job sticking with them and growing and integrating with new suppliers and working with new retailers. So yeah, just been really fortunate. If anything, I think it's helped accelerate a lot of the other, similar to what the group's talking about, data and IoT stuff that we've been building. Like, how do we communicate with our systems or people without needing to be there? How do we become more autonomous? You know, how do we make the units themselves more autonomous? So
experience teaches us that these types of crises typically trigger new avenues of growth. And startups like yours, you're constantly looking for new avenues of growth, and every avenue is new. But with what's going on, what moves can you make now to serve your customers, your employees, and your stakeholders that kind of put you in a better position for the long term? So, Carolyn, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, I think the moves that we can make right now. So one, I kind of talked about how like optimization is a general technology. And I think one of the dangers of a general technology is that people don't really know how to apply it directly. And so something that we've been doing and will continue to do is to create kind of example models and also just, basically like pre-formulate certain models that are just common across an industry. So whether, you know, Boaz mentioned like kind of the crop planning and like, and being able to service, particular fields, like that could be a model. Like, how do you route somebody efficiently around a set of fields, something like that. And so we've been really focused on creating kind of like a specific samples of models so that it's more accessible, for whatever industry we kind of tackle and go into. And that's been one of the, I think, the critical ways ways that that we are trying to be helpful to both like stakeholders and to kind of prove our cross-industry applicability to our investors as well.
Great. Lou, how about you?
Yeah, a little bit to what I was mentioning before about, you know, creating like systems that make it easier to communicate back and forth. And you mentioned the hiring as well. We're investing a lot into growing within those regions themselves and to, you know, to meet the demand. In addition, there's, you know, we're pretty fortunate that this technology is you know, is pretty robust and it can work in a number of different categories. So, you know, by us expanding to different regions, having, you know, being at source for different, you know, produce categories, it's helping to really accelerate some of our product development efforts as well. So, you know, we're working on new categories, you know, such as cucumbers and apples and more citrus categories. So I think as far as with our customers, what happens is you usually work with a supplier or you work with a retailer and they're pretty open with what they struggle with the most. And having our systems there, our people there has really, I think, helped, you know, increase the velocity at which we can meet that, you know, their demand or inquiries on different categories.
That's great. Boaz, how about you?
So we believe that the demand for reliable data and that comes directly from the field will continue to, the value of it will continue to increase, and the demand will continue to increase from both from growers but also for partners and the rest of the supply chain, because this is the operation level. This is where everything is happening, and then you're sending it to the next level, to the packing house, and it's very important to understand what is happening in the field. So we believe that we can add more layers of working with the field and basically add more layers of data working with growers.
Where do you have people right now? Mostly in California, or do you have them in other places as well?
So in total, Fieldling has almost 100 employees. In general, 50% of them are R&D site in Israel, and the other 50 are located in California, spread all over the country. Sales, marketing, and operation are sitting here in Central Valley, California.
I think I heard, I don't know if it was on a podcast or something, that your partner was stranded in Israel for a while just because of COVID and couldn't get back. Is he back or is he still over there?
No. So he got back a month ago. And actually, it's funny that you're asking, because it's a me and my partner are, you know, we are in this journey for the last 7 years. I'm always laughing that I started the company a bachelor and now I'm married with two kids in a different country. And suddenly he was stuck in Israel for almost 4 months. And the distance was very challenging for us after so many years. So my wife was laughing about me that he's my... that I'm missing him more than I miss my family. But yes, it was challenging time, but thank God he's here and he's full power working with our clients here.
Great, thank you.
So what can we forecast about May of next year based on what happened this May? If that's not possible necessarily to be that specific, but what do you hope is going to stick around? What's going to stay with us?
Yeah, I think... you know, I do think some of the changes that we're seeing kind of like across the food industry are going to stick around. The reality is that, like, you know, they say it takes, you know, 4 to 8 weeks to build a habit. And right now we've been in lockdown for, you know, like 4 months. So I think fundamentally we're changing consumer behavior in a really big way to rely more heavily on things like delivery and, you know, just like local sourcing and stuff like that. So I think that some of those things are going to stay. And, you know, I think the really big thing is looking at the data to understand kind of like, you know, correlation of different signals to the actual forecast itself is something that we'll have to look at. Because I think the seasonality things that normally you could rely on are going to be a little bit flawed, you know, looking at you know, May to May or May to next May, if that makes sense.
Yes. Anybody else have thoughts on that one?
I think that growers will adopt to the new demand. They will understand what is the new demand. Just be careful to talk about what you just said, because less flights, less hotels, less demand. and they will understand how to feed the, also the supply chain will fit itself to the new demand. Regarding startups and other like companies, I think that we will develop that new ways to communicate with partners and growers will be adopted, and hopefully it will stay with us and we will not have to fly and to drive to face-to-face a meeting, or, you know, to do only the last meeting or the first meeting, but for sure not the entire process.
Oh, I had one more thing actually to add as well. So in addition to kind of like just like these habits, I think like fundamentally shifting, one thing I hope stays is that I think this has made every company, regardless of your industry, look at the state of your operations and make your system more resilient to change. And I hope that that stays because I think making something more resilient to change is ultimately how we make like our systems more sustainable. And you don't have kind of these like peaks and valleys of labor support and peaks and valleys of supply and stuff like that. You can kind of just get to a more even playing field on operations. So I'm really hoping that trend stays. I think it's kind of just shed light on some of the issues across the supply chain in that regard.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Carolyn. I think looking at across the whole supply chain and just how fragile things are, that we didn't even think about how fragile they were, and that we've had to build in resilience and do things differently. So I think in the food industry, it's really shown a light on some of that fragility, and I think we're starting to figure out ways to fix it. So I totally agree with you. All right, I think we're probably done here. And I really want to thank our panelists for being willing to be on this and have this discussion. It's an important discussion. And I think, you know, as we continue to reflect on where we were before COVID and then what we're doing now and then what the future is going to look like, these are really important learnings on how we build the food industry and a system that is resilient. So thank you very much for the conversation.
This concludes season one of PMA Takes on Tech. Thank you to my listeners who have hung in with me as I learn how to do podcasts and to share insights of what I see in our food supply during this time. Please stay tuned for season two and send me any ideas of what you would like me to take on. Thank you.
That's it for this episode of PMA Takes on Tech. Thanks for allowing us to serve as your guide to the new world of produce and technology. Be sure to check out all of our episodes at pma.com and wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe, and I would love to get any comments or suggestions on what you might want me to take on. For now, stay safe and eat your fruits and vegetables, and we'll see you next time.